Welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from Eastern State Penitentiary, we have the Senior Vice President and Director of Interpretation, Sean Kelly. Sean, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
You said you were a tour guide once. You kind of had that, yay, let's talk about Eastern State.
Yeah, you have to. It's the nature of these jobs. You know, anyone who works in a museum or works in a historic site, ultimately it's about the visitor. You got to figure out, you got to spend a lot of time listening to your visitors and talking to them and understanding what engages them about the subject, and it's just the nature of these jobs, yeah.
Well, of course, now we're talking about visitors who come in, buy a ticket, and then leave. In the past, of course, you want to go through the history of its more permanent residents.
And, sure.
And let's talk about the historic place of Eastern State in penal history.
I sure will. Eastern State was once the most famous and expensive prison in the world. Eastern State Penitentiary and Sing Sing are really the two prisons that changed the way that people all over the world think about what prisons are for. So I'll give you the short little history of Eastern State. It opened in 1829 on farmland outside of Philadelphia. They didn't move the building. Little kids ask us that sometimes. They didn't move the building. The city grew. But if you know where Eastern State is, it's near the Art Museum, and it's on a hill. And in the early days, you would look up from the city, and there'd be this castle up there on the hill. This is the 1820s, 1830s. The building was built with the belief that people are inherently good. They believe that every man, woman, and child is a good person. And so they believed that to make a lawbreaker into someone who is going to be a good citizen, what they needed was silence in order to have that person look into their heart and become penitent. Eastern State Penitentiary is the world's first penitentiary, a prison designed to make someone remorseful, to make them sorry for their behavior. And so the entire prison was built for solitary confinement and silence. It opened that way in 1829 and was copied all over the world. So governments from Europe and from South America and Asia sent representatives to Philadelphia to study the building, literally to measure it, and then go back and build one like it. And so there are hundreds of these things all over the world. And then slowly over time, it became clear that solitary confinement was a terrible idea for people living in confinement. And so they phased it out and then officially gave it up. And in the 20th century, Eastern State was a modern big house prison. So they had a baseball team and they had a movie theater and the guys ate lunch in the dining halls and worked in workshops and all the stuff you see in the prison movies. It became like Shawshank in the 20th century, but still living inside the shell of this once revolutionary solitary confinement prison.
Our founding fathers were of the opinion that it was penitence that we were looking for here.
They were. I mean, it's so hard to put your head in that space. The building opened within living memory of the American Revolution. You know, right after the Revolution, a group of some of them founding fathers, people like Ben Franklin, got together and said, hey, if we can reinvent government, why can't we do better with the prisons? At the time, prisons were these typically a warehouse, a large open holding cell. And they would put everybody in together. These were disease-ridden, violent buildings. And this group in 1787, right after the American Revolution, said, hey, there's got to be a way to do better, to make people who are living in prison, give them an advantage so when they get out, they will become better people. By the way, that group that met in 1787 is still around. Today, they're called the Pennsylvania Prison Society. But prison reform was internationally was born in Philadelphia. The idea that prisons can reflect our best values as a society, that idea is absolutely a Philadelphia idea.
Is it still practiced?
Solitary confinement?
Yeah. Well, obviously we know solitary confinement is, but
it's still practiced for safety and it's practiced for punishment, but it's not practiced for rehabilitation. So when they built Eastern State, they believed isolation was the key to making people better people. And most psychiatrists would tell you today it's more likely to do just the opposite. It brings out the worst in people, but it's a very effective punishment. People hate it. And so it's used typically as punishment in prisons today. Mm. About 80,000 people on a given day in the United States are living in solitary confinement. We are the world's leader in the use of solitary confinement, for better or for worse.
In the United States.
The United States is the world leader internationally for using solitary confinement, yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about your current mission then, but let's go back to historic Eastern State. When someone visits it today, you can get a taste of what these prisoners went through back in 1829. What were their cells like? What was their day like?
Their day in the early days, their days were extremely quiet, as I said. They did work in their cells. They slept and ate in their cells. In the early days, they almost never left that one room. And the room is about 8 by 12 feet. So it's a small little white room with a skylight overhead. And you could look up and see the sky in this little circular skylight. Sometimes the prisoners called it the Eye of God, looking down on them. And their life was one of silence. Those prison sentences were relatively short, though. So they would be in prison for maybe 2 years or three. By today's standards, they were short sentences, but in a very pure isolation. Also, people tended not to live as long back then.
Did they have a Bible with them? Did they have tracts? Were they counseled?
The only reading material they had was the Bible. Good guess. About half the prisoners couldn't read anyway, but they had a copy of the Bible, nothing else to read, no visitors from the outside. They believed that the society on the outside was what was making people behave badly, and so they wanted to cut off all contact with the outside world and also keep the people who were incarcerated from talking to each other. And so what you'll see if you visit Eastern State today is this strangely beautiful building. You know, on the outside, it looks like a castle. So it's got battlements and arrow-slit windows. And the outside is pure Gothic castle meant to intimidate. They wrote about how they wanted the outside of the building to look so scary that people would behave themselves. But you get inside, and it's the exact opposite. It's high ceilings. There's more than 1,000 skylights in the building. So sunlight just pours into this building with big arch ceilings. The corridors look like a cathedral.
But now to make sure, though, that they stayed isolated, now it's got a unique design, right? It's mm-hmm. it's like a wheel spoke.
That's right. It's set like a
– you're not side by side.
It's a wagon wheel. So there's a center control point. There's a center room. It's a round room in the very center of the building. And from that room, you can look down every one of the corridors because they all radiate out like the spokes of a wheel. And from that one spot, you can see everything. If you went into a prison today, you'd see an officer looking at a wall of video monitors. Every prison's got one of these rooms. For that matter, shopping malls have these rooms now. That one, the space in the middle of Eastern State Penitentiary is the 1820s version of that room. From that one spot, a single person can see everything, looking all down all those corridors.
So what? Why did the system collapse? Why did they change their mind about solitude or about having the individual alone?
Well, there were two reasons. The main reason, they said, was the expense. And so it was extremely expensive to run the system. Out of New York, Sing Sing had a different model that also believed in isolating people. But in Sing Sing, they gathered people together in groups. At Eastern State Penitentiary, they were physically separate all the time. And it made it just very inefficient to run. But also quietly and largely unacknowledged, the criticism was growing that profound isolation could drive people insane. And that is something that they would – in the institutional records, they would – every so often you'd see them acknowledge it. But it was mostly critics on the outside, critics like Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens came to the U.S. and said the two things he wanted most to see in the United States – were Niagara Falls and Eastern State Penitentiary. This building was incredibly influential. Charles Dickens had this lifelong interest in prisons. He was always writing about prisons. And so he visited Eastern State and devoted a chapter of his book on America, a full chapter, to Eastern State. But he was very critical of it. And he said, I hold this slow and daily tampering with the mysteries of the brain to be immeasurably worse than any torture of the body. So he would argue that building dungeons and torture chambers would be a kinder punishment than trying to affect the way that people think.
My goodness. So then they followed, I guess, Sing Sing's idea and opened up the cells to allow them to congregate?
They did. I wouldn't necessarily say it was following Sing Sing, but it was this general idea that over time they began to think actually getting the people who are incarcerated to talk to each other, to resolve their conflicts in healthy ways, to meet with staff, to meet with each other, to stay connected to their families on the outside so they have a real sense of the world they want to go back to. All these things proved to be very beneficial, not harmful, as exact opposite of the original idea. So slowly over time, they began allowing more and more of that communication and more of the connection to the outside world. And then officially in 1913, they gave the whole thing up. So 1913, they kind of threw their hands up and said, you know what? Sorry about that. It's been almost 100 years, but that was not a good idea. And it ran as a congregate prison for another 70 years.
And that's when you get into crafts and jobs for the prisoners within the building there. You want to talk a little bit about that life after 1913?
It's actually, I think, easier for our visitors to imagine the building in its earlier years, because in its earlier years, the building was silent. And of course, today there aren't people incarcerated there. So you walk through and the cells are empty and the corridors, all you see are other visitors. You don't see, of course, anyone who's incarcerated there. That later period, though, is so interesting. Like we show because the building became a small city. And so, as you said, there were workshops and there were, there's a laundry shop and there was a giant kitchen facility. They were making bread for all the facilities on the eastern half of Pennsylvania, shipping it out every night, baking 1,000 loaves of bread every night. And there was a movie theater. And it was like a small city, almost totally self-contained up there, just thriving with, 1,800 people packed into about 2.5 square blocks. We have a silent movie that we show that was filmed in 1929. And you just see this mass of people, just, hundreds and hundreds of people in every one of these corridors. And that's the part of the history that that we really try to evoke on our audio tour. We have an audio tour narrated by Steve Buscemi from Boardwalk Empire. And the 20th century part of that, we really try to evoke the sounds of just the hustle and bustle of 1,800 men. At that point, they were all men packed into such a small space, for week after week, month after month, year after year.
Year after year. You have a synagogue. I know you have chapels, hospital facility, at least a clinic.
Yep. They had a very sophisticated modern hospital. We now give tours of the hospital every day. We restored our synagogue a couple years back, and it's actually my favorite part of the whole building. I wasn't raised Jewish, but the synagogue is so beautiful and so simple. And in this building that is in some ways so institutional, even with its high ceilings and sunlight, it can be a very cold and institutional space. And then you walk into the synagogue and it's got a plaster ceiling with a Star of David, and it's got the wood walls, that has all the woodwork and the built-in benches and this old linoleum floor from the 50s. And it's just – it breaks your heart. It's such a sweet little space.
When some of your famous – we all know about Al Capone. You hosted Al Capone.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about some of the famous characters that were there, in its heyday when it was really a bustling prison.
Sure. Al Capone's by far our most famous prisoner. Al Capone was there in 1929 and into 1930. He was in Philadelphia. It was actually the first time that he was ever convicted of anything, which is funny. If you look at we actually reproduce his intake card outside of the cell where he was living at Eastern State. And the intake card lists all the times he'd been accused of crimes. And these were not minor crimes. It was like suspicion of murder, dismissed, suspicion of murder, dismissed, suspicion of murder, dismissed. Oh, this whole long list. And then finally here in Philadelphia, he got caught carrying a concealed deadly weapon, a relatively minor crime. And the judge gave him the maximum sentence, which was 1 year in prison. Should have been in county time, which would have been at Holmesburg. But the city of Philadelphia was worried they couldn't keep him safe. He was a man with a lot of enemies. They didn't want the embarrassment of someone that well-known getting hurt on their watch. And so this is not all that unusual. The city arranged a transfer and had him housed in the state prison at Eastern State Penitentiary, even though he was serving a county sentence. Lived at Eastern State for about 8 months. And there's a lot of debate. At the time, there were many, many reports saying he had special treatment. And so we show his cell today the way it's described in the newspapers, which is with an oriental rug and an ornate lamp and paintings on the walls and a cabinet-style radio. We've heard some reports recently, as we've dug more deeply into this stuff, that suggests that maybe his stay was a little more typical than it sounded. But the newspapers made a big deal of him getting special treatment, and that's still part of the story. He's getting some kind of special treatment. It's a question of how much.
Okay. What about you had Willie Sutton?
Willie Sutton.
The train robber.
Slick Willie, yes. Slick. It's funny. He's not very well known today. So if you ask someone who's under 40 about Willie Sutton, they tend not to know who he is. In the 1950s, 40s, 30s, Willie Sutton was a folk hero. He was known all over the country. He was called either Slick Willie, a nickname that later people started applying to Bill Clinton. But it comes from Willie Sutton, or Willie the Actor, Willie the Gentleman. He would rob banks in costume. So he would come to a bank dressed as a police officer and say, "You got to let me in. We heard a report. There's going to be a bank robbery here." And then they would let him in, and then he would, of course, turn around and rob the bank. He never tweet that we know of. He never hurt anybody. And later in his life, he started off robbing banks, but later he became known as an escape artist. He escaped from 5 prisons over the course of his career, including from Eastern State Penitentiary. If you Google American Express Willie Sutton, you can see an ad that he made at the very end of his life saying, "You know, even I, the famous escape artist Willie Sutton, can't beat the new American Express card." For, you know, he was known for this, that he was such a slippery character that he could escape from any place. So Sutton escaped from Eastern State Penitentiary in 1945 in a tunnel escape. We think that he had very little to do with the planning of that tunnel, but he got himself invited along, which is not nothing. And all of those guys were recaptured, including Willie Sutton, and brought back. So it is hard to stay out of prison after a prison break, and we see that again and again.
You had some really rough characters there, though, gangs and some really serious players in murder and bootlegging, et cetera, all the crimes of that era.
We did. The building in the 1930s, the 20s and 30s became a place where the state of Pennsylvania began sending the prisoners they considered to be the most troublemakers, the most irredeemable. They began sending to Eastern State. So it had come full cycle. 100 years after it opened, it became where the state – it was old. The building was already 100 years old in the 1920s. And they were just dumping the people who they considered the most dangerous into this building. And so in the 1920s, 1930s, it became a very dangerous place and filled with people who had done some substantial, serious, violent crimes. There was a warden back in those days, Warden McKenty, who believed that he had the secret to rehabilitating people in prison would be to have them self-govern. And so he created a whole system of self-governance, which was a disaster, an absolute disaster. A group of guys began calling themselves the Four Horsemen, and they controlled all the job details, which the warden thought was a good idea to give them some sense of responsibility, but maybe just chose the wrong people. But those guys began to use the work details, which are highly coveted in prisons, to what your job is hugely important, and their ability to control that gave them power over the other prisoners. They began to essentially run the prison from the inside.
Oh, let's take care of some business here. You're listening to Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we're talking to Sean Kelly, Senior Vice President and Director of Interpretation at Eastern State Penitentiary. If you'd like more information about what we're talking about today, well, it's an easy one, easternstate.org. That's easternstate.org. Tell me about how the prison fell and how you resurrected it and what its mission is today. But first, Pep.
Pep. Pep is a beloved character in Eastern State's history. Pep was a Labrador Retriever sent to Eastern State Penitentiary by Governor Pinchot in the 1920s. And when he arrived at Eastern State, the staff gave him an inmate number. And the folklore quickly developed that he had killed the governor's wife's cat. But he really did have an inmate number. He really does have a mugshot that was taken as he came in. We've discovered that the folklore is just that. It's folklore. And we found a letter actually from the governor to the warden saying, "Hey, the police training academy has an extra dog. Would this lift the prisoner's spirits if you guys had a mascot dog living on the property?" And it makes sense when you think about it. His name was Pep, like a pep rally. So Pep was framed. We don't believe he actually killed anybody. And if you feel bad for poor Pep, just I'm a dog lover myself. And I try to imagine a dog in with 1,800 people. That dog must have gotten a lot of attention. He's probably pretty happy with his life there at Eastern State. But he lived there in the 1920s. And today we actually sell a little plush toy of him in the store. He's kind of become our mascot again. Very much beloved.
Now, so you got a prison that is completely abandoned by 71. I mean, in the early 70s, this thing is empty, and they're thinking about tearing it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened?
The city of Philadelphia purchased the property. So the state left. The state had been trying to close the place for decades, and they just had to find more beds. The building was so old, was built for solitary confinement, but they weren't using it that way. It was just collapsing. And so the state finally transferred the last people out in 1970, and they went to Graterford, which incidentally is closing now as well. So we've come full cycle. But the last guys got transferred to Graterford. The city purchased the property and ran it for a couple months in 71. And the city's original plan was to turn it into another prison. And they found, like a lot of old buildings, it was actually cheaper to build a new prison than to fix this one. And so that was plan A. Plan B was to tear the whole thing down. And they found that Eastern State is built out of such an extraordinary amount of stone, and it took them 150 years to build this prison, that, you know, 150 years of packing in more stone cell blocks resulted in basically having to remove a stone quarry if you wanted to clear the property. And so they found that it wasn't worth it, that they didn't want to it was financially made no sense. And so then the city turned it over to redevelopment. And we had proposals for things like a shopping mall or a condominium. We actually showed these on the tour, the photographs of what are the illustrations of what it would have looked like as a condominium. And this would be in like sort of the mid-80s at this point. And a group of historians and preservationists and criminologists here in Philadelphia gathered and said, the old Eastern State Penitentiary changed the world. It changed the way that people thought of what prisons are for, what they could be. It has these ripple effects all over the world. It deserves better than being turned into a gap, you know. And so they went to the city and lobbied. And to their credit, actually, the city eventually decided that they were right, that the building deserved better and that the preservation community could have it. And then there was kind of this moment of like, okay, now what do we do? Now we've got this building. At that point, it had been abandoned for 20 years. It has had hazardous materials in it. It was dangerous. It was just truly this ruinous old building up on Fairmont Avenue. And there was two questions. There was one question. There's two possibilities. Possibility number one, raise, what, $15 million, build a modern museum. Option number two, open the doors. Just let people come in. And you have to give them hard hats because the building was so dangerous. Have them sign a waiver that said that, you know, they might get killed on the property. But just open the building. And that second option ended up winning out. And so that, to their enormous credit, that group of people just opened the building up and did almost nothing. I was hired in the second year, so I remember some of these days of just – we had a couple of tour guides. We made everyone wear a hard hat. We made everyone sign some waivers, and we just went, let our visitors go explore this abandoned building. And that is still such a part of our DNA, that we just trust the building to be interesting. It doesn't need holograms and lasers. The building is fascinating. And so we try to let our visitors experience every square inch that we can while they're safe. The hard hats are long gone. We've done engineering studies, and we've done about $14 million worth of preservation on the building. So the hard hats aren't necessary anymore. But it is still very much a ruin. And we think that's one of the things our visitors love about it.
Now, its new mission is to start dialogue and to start discussion about prisons and criminal justice, and you're doing it through art and installation, speaking of lasers and holograms.
Yep, we sure are, but they're still fairly simple. Some of our visitors just would want to come and see Al Capone's cell, maybe see the synagogue, see the solitary confinement cells, see the baseball diamond, and there's nothing wrong with that, and that's visitors can still do that. We found that naturally, the building was bringing up a lot of questions about today's criminal justice system, like do prisons work? And why does the United States put so many more people in prison than other countries? And so slowly over time, we've begun first working with artists who wanted to address subjects like that, and then building a giant graph and later an exhibit about mass incarceration and asking our visitors questions. And they're sincere questions. We're not trying to push a lot of ideas on people, but, you know, looking at the racial disparity of our prisons over time, why is this? Why are there so many people of color in our prisons? Our visitors will have lots of different answers to that, and we try to respect those many perspectives, with the exception, of course, of truly offensive ideas that mm-hmm. that every so often come up. Someone might write something on one of our talkback walls we might pull if it's really offensive, but for the most part, we genuinely want to host conversations about things like race and the effectiveness of our criminal justice system. Many Americans believe that criminal justice is the civil rights issue of our generation, And so we built an exhibit that talks a lot about this, invites visitors to weigh in, invites them to participate by, for instance, getting into the main exhibit, you have to walk down a corridor either to the left or the right. The left says, I've broken the law, and the right says, I've never broken the law. We call that the liar's corridor if you go down the one that says, I've never broken the law. And then there's a confession wall there, and you can write down something you did that was illegal. And then we mix those confessions with confessions of people serving time in prison and let visitors try to guess which one is which. Certainly, we are not prison abolitionists. We believe that a well-funded and well-professionally run prison system is critical for a safe society. And so we are definitely not anti-prison in principle. But that said, we also believe that there's a lot of room for improvement in our prison systems. And we're very interested in hearing our visitors' perspectives on what's next.
And you do invite artists to submit, and new installations are constantly being installed.
That's right. We're always installing new work. This year we have 3 new art installations. One is by a group called Photo Requests from Solitary, and they've been doing this around the country, but here in Philadelphia they're crowdsourcing volunteer photographers, you know, from our visitors, and actually linked this right from our website without even visiting the site. But they're looking for volunteer photographers to create images requested by people living in long-term solitary confinement. So people who live in solitary confinement typically have a very bland and low-stimulation world, and so people will request things like all sorts of things from, you know, my hometown at sunset to a picture of Jesus, you know, or whatever. And so they are getting volunteer photographers to create those images, which they then exhibit at Eastern State, but also, of course, send to the person who's living in solitary confinement. Another new piece we have is by Rachel of Dahlin, and Rachel is working in our greenhouse. We have a beautiful, tiny, gorgeous little greenhouse built in the 1930s at Eastern State. Rachel highlights the story. This is a really upsetting story, but she highlights the story of a man who served time at Eastern State Penitentiary because he tried to assist a young woman with an abortion. You know, he's being paid for this. This is in the 1950s when abortion was legal, and she died. And so he ended up serving time at Eastern State Penitentiary. It was a huge story in Philadelphia in the 1950s. And so Rachel has reproduced images from the newspapers inside the greenhouse. But you have to be in the greenhouse to read them, because if you're outside the greenhouse, they're in reverse. So if you walk in, you can read all these stories. We found that artists often are very naturally know how to communicate with our visitors and raise important questions.
Mm-hmm. How should we visit?
Our website is easternstate.org, as you mentioned. We are open 361 days a year. So we're open 7 days a week from 10 to 5. We don't sell out, so you can always just walk up. Tickets are a little cheaper if you buy them online. There's a guided tour and discussion every day at 2 o'clock, and those are by reservation only. They're free with admission. But you want to sign up for those in advance. They typically sell out, so sign up online.
So you do offer guided tours.
We do. And lately we've begun to hire people who've been incarcerated to lead those tours. It's a special program where people who've been out of prison for a little while can come and learn the building's history, but then also offer their personal perspectives on it. We've been doing this for 2 years now. It's a program every summer now that lets some of our guides speak from personal experience about the American prison system today. It's also a work training program. It lasts. We do it in the summertime, so we're coming into our 3rd year of doing this, and we put a lot of work into trying to make that transition into other more permanent job placement for those guides in that program. And most visitors spend about 2.5 hours. It's a typical length of stay. I said length of stay in our prison. That sounds like I meant something else. And it is the most photogenic place you'll ever see. It's just so beautiful and so eerie. So I would recommend people, if you're a photographer and you have a special camera, bring that along. Dress for the weather.
Because a lot of it is still open.
A lot of it's still open.
So, of course, if we want more information about the art installations, about any of the programming that goes on there, easternstate.org, the place to go, easternstate.org. And my guest today has been Sean Kelly, the Senior Vice President and Director of Interpretation for Eastern State Penitentiary. Sean, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's been a pleasure.
I love Eastern State. And again, go to easternstate.org for more information. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.